Welcome to the ARUG Zen Center podcast. Our talks and discussions are offered for free to anyone who is interested in the ancient wisdom tradition of Zen. If you find these recordings to be of benefit, please consider donating to ARUG through our website, www.zenwave.org. Thank you for listening and for your kind support.
Okay, good morning. Good to see everybody here on Zoom. So today we are going to explore a short section from an important text in the Mahayana tradition, a book titled The Way of the Bodhisattva. The Way of the Bodhisattva was composed by Shantideva, who was an 8th century Indian Buddhist monk, poet, scholar, and a traveling yogi for the last part of his life. It's a brilliant text that actually outlines the naturally humble, right, so connecting it with the theme of our Ango, the naturally humble functioning of an awakened mind or an actualized enlightenment that leads to being in the world for the benefit of all. The numerous commentaries to this important text, including one by the Dalai Lama, the one we will be working with today is Pema Chodron, which I find very accessible and easy to relate to. So the section we will focus on today relates to the way our pride or arrogance seeks to assert itself, how to recognize this powerful energy when it arises in us, and how to quell it. Before we get to that, I want to go to the beginning of this text. At that point, Shantideva opens with a humble expression which kind of sets the tone for the entire text or book. He writes, "What I have to say has all been said before, and I am destitute of learning and of skill with words. I therefore have no thought that this might be of benefit to others. I wrote it only to sustain my own understanding." So he begins with that. And Pema's commentary on that, she says, "Humility should not be confused with low self-esteem. When Shantideva says he is destitute of learning and of skill with words, he is not expressing self-contempt. The low self-esteem so common in the West rests on a fixed idea of personal inadequacy. Shantideva is committed to not getting trapped in such limiting identities or any identity. He is simply humble enough to know where he gets stuck and intelligent enough to realize he has the tools to free himself." It's a very important line, the last one. He is humble enough to know where he gets stuck and also not make a big deal out of that. And then intelligent enough to realize that he has the tools. He has embedded tools, right? Inherent tools to free himself. So keep that in mind. So this is verses 48 to 53 that I want to read from. He says, "When one intends to move, or when one intends to speak, one should first examine one's own mind and then act appropriately with composure. When one sees one's mind to be attached or repulsed, then one should neither act nor speak, but remain still like a piece of wood. When my mind is condescending, sarcastic, full of conceit and arrogance, ridiculing, evasive, and deceitful, or when it is inclined to boast, or when it is contemptuous of others, abusive, and irritable, then I should remain still like a piece of wood. When my mind is averse to the interest of others and seeks my own self-interest, or when it wishes to speak out of desire for an audience, then I will remain still like a piece of wood. When it is impatient, lazy, timid, disrespectful, excessively talkative or biased in my own favor, then I will remain still like a piece of wood. Now, it's obviously phenomenal, powerful advice, very challenging to work with, not just to learn how to remain still like a piece of wood, but more importantly, or before we get to that, to learn to acknowledge and admit what he's talking about, to admit that those energies arise in us, to own up to them, to recognize and own up, and then to allow that to lead us to the non-action he's talking about. Or at least to recognize what's going to happen to the action, the words or actions, that arise or will follow this kind of energies, right? To see consequences, kind of like a chess player, right? To see where it will lead and then decide to not go there before it becomes words and before those words become actions. So in the commentary, Pema Chodron says, here Shantideva describes being on the verge of getting carried away. And then she says, there are four places we can interrupt this powerful urge. First, at the pre-verbal level. And second, when thoughts are still small. Third, when they're already ensnared us, they've ensnared us. And the fourth one, and just before we act out, Now, at the pre-verbal level, emotional turmoil begins with an initial perception, a sight, sound, thought, which gives rise to a feeling of comfort or discomfort. So there's something going on there, energetically speaking. This is the subtlest level of shenpa, the subtlest level of getting hooked. Now, the word shenpa refers to the stickiness or the sticky quality of our attachment, or the strong pull of our tempting, or how we become tempted to follow familiar habits. Energetically, there is a perceptible pull. It's like wanting to scratch an itch. We don't have to be advanced meditators to catch this. We have to be willing to be honest, right? The initial tug of for or against, right? And we can also, of course, connect that with liking or disliking, right? So being in the world in a different way, right? Going beyond preferences. So the initial tug of for or against is the first place we can remain as steady as a log. Just experience the tug. Just experience it, right? So it's not suppression. Experience it and relax into the restlessness of this energy. Relax into the restlessness of the energy, right? Which is what we do in Zazen, or what we are taught to do in Zazen, right? Or teach ourselves. Without fanning this ember with thoughts. Without fanning this ember with further thoughts. If we stay present with the rawness of our direct experience, emotional energy can move through us without getting stuck. Of course, this isn't easy and it takes practice. And it takes time. Second, when thoughts are still small. So the second opportunity for staying steady and alert is when our thoughts are underway but haven't gained momentum yet. By interrupting thoughts before we get worked up, we diffuse the intensity of emotions. Emotional intensity cannot survive without our thoughts. So this is a pivotal instruction. Again, emotional intensity cannot survive without our thoughts. And it's not saying that there is no such thing as emotional intensity. Of course, And it's also not saying that it doesn't feel, we don't feel trapped by that, or it doesn't feel heavy or sticky. It just means that we understand or discern the point from which it builds up momentum or not, based on how we meet, how we react to our own intensification, internal intensification in regards to something that we encounter, right? So a lot of our practice has to do with learning how to meet ourselves, not so much learning how to meet the world and others. Of course, that's what happens all the time. But if we don't know how to meet ourselves, in other words, if we don't know how to meet our own intensification of energy, aggression, anger, all of it, then it will lash out through us. It's not that we lash out, but it lashes out. It uses us because we don't know how to meet it. So it takes over. It's very important, right? So emotional intensity cannot survive without our thoughts. We fan the flames. We add fuel to the fire, which means that there is fire. But it also means that we have to learn how to meet fire. So I'm going to read the next two, but I want to hear what you have to say about that. So if a thought comes to you that you want to share or a question, keep it in mind and bring it up. Third, when they've already ensnared us, if we don't catch these subtle thoughts, our emotions escalate. Nevertheless, this is the third place we can remain like a log. We can let the storyline go even after the emotional heat has started to rise. So there is further intensification at this level, as she describes. But what she's saying is we can let the storyline go, not let it go in terms of let it open the door and tell it leave. That's not what this means. It means let it play. Let it play out and observe it. It's never too late to interrupt the escalation of the kleshas. Just before, in the fourth one, just before we act out. The fourth place we can hold our seats is just before we take the fatal step of speaking or acting out. And this is not an exaggeration, the fatal step of speaking or acting out, because we do create a great deal of harm, a great deal of harm, even if it's not immediately seen, right? It's not perceptible to us. Still, we do create. It may not be immediate. It may be down the road. But we do create that for ourselves and others. So what she says, Shantideva's advice is, do not act, be silent, do not speak. So, how does that sound to you? welcome to, thank you for joining us today. This is Jeff.
I was so happy to find you. I'm here visiting my mother in Franklin Lakes, up and around. I'll be here for a few weeks.
Oh, so you don't live here?
No, I used to. I grew up in Franklin Lakes.
Okay. Okay, so we will benefit from seeing you when you come to see her. We will benefit from seeing you.
I'll always try and come. I have a memorial next weekend, but I think the following weekend.
Wonderful. Did you want to comment on that, or?
Oh, I just thought it was great.
Okay.
The image of don't fan the ember made me think of Bankei, you know, just that each thought can send you into one of the six realms. Just stay in the unborn and don't go there. But it was a very nice image of the fanning and the ember.
Yeah, right. And to recognize how we do it. To recognize that we actually do it, right? Yeah. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that resisting it can also be a way to fan the ember in some ways. Mm-hmm. I think we treat a lot of our reflexes that can create either, you know, stop more suffering as things to restrain or hold, because we kind of reduce ourselves to them, to those tendencies. And I think in that restraint, we often fan that flame further. For better or for worse, I keep getting targeted ads for Tricycle Magazine on Instagram. And recently there was a line that I never heard before, but I really enjoyed it, where it was, you know, I forget, I'm paraphrasing it, but it was something about treating your mind like a broken gong, where when somebody hits you on the head, it doesn't reverberate. And I really liked that image of, you're going to get hit. It's up to you whether or not you let that strike resonate in a lot of ways. And I think that here it's, yeah, your first impulse when you start noticing some of these ways in which you create suffering in your life, I think, feel like your first impulse is to smack the wrist and scold it. And this goes back to a lot of discussions we've had about what we do in our practice is not passive. I think that there's a lot of ways this could imply you just sit there and let it happen to us, or watch it happen, or whatever, but there's a lot of activity there, and I'm not really sure how to unpack it further, but I really like this idea.
So you talk about no rejection, right? You don't push, right? You don't, right. So she talks about it in the line of just experience the tug and relax into the restlessness of the energy without fanning this ember with thoughts, right? So to relax into it, and it's important that we take this and bring it into our zazen practice, or bring our zazen practice to that, which means post-zazen practice, as we sometimes refer to it, right? So to in zazen, what do? We do exactly that, right? We don't get up and go. We remain still like a piece of wood, mm-hmm. right? But piece of wood is not numb,
right?
It's not that we don't experience. It's not shutting down or numbing anything. It's actually creating more and more space for that to be, mm-hmm. or for all of those things to coexist, right? Or multiple things. But to relax into the feet, how do we relax into what doesn't feel relaxing? Mm-hmm. It feels intense. It isn't. It's not. It is intense, right? So how do we ease into or relax into, sometimes she refers to it as leaning against the sharp edges. Learning how to lean against what we want to run away from. Or act out in this case. Act out or speak out, one second. Or speak out, right? So leaning against it is acknowledging it, making space for it, right? And telling it, it's okay. It's fine. You can be this way, right? So telling the intensified energy, it's okay for you to be exactly the way you are. And then we teach ourselves how to be okay with other people's intensities, right? Or obnoxiousness. We have to learn to be with our own obnoxiousness first, and there is a lot of that. Because if we reject that, well, of course we're going to reject other people's obnoxiousness. Mm-hmm. And then claim that we don't have that kind of energies. Right? It's easy to do that. But yeah, relax into it. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that it's important to make the distinction, I think, between observing it and not fanning it and letting it be there and stewing. Right?
Yeah.
Being with that and being, you know, I'm mixing it up, you know. But I'm not doing anything, but you are.
Right, exactly, right. So, okay, so we talk about the quality of being still like a piece of wood, right? It's not so simple, right? You know, I shut up, but then it builds up. But then that's why we have to discern the thoughts.
I mean, the ember can start.
Because if I'm thinking about it, right, so I am developing further aggression, right? And it's actually even worse because it has no way to express itself, mm-hmm. so it's going to intensify.
Yeah.
Naturally, this is how it works, right? So, right, so how do we work with, so to first of all, to recognize, right? So you're talking about different stages of recognition. You recognize the arising resistance, because that's what it is, arising resistance to the situation, right? The reactivity. And then you learn to quell it. It's not just recognizing, it's also learning to work with it. So not fanning the flame is one way, is one thing we need to do, but we also need to do something else. It's not passively not fanning, I'm not going to add anything to it. I'm just standing on the side watching. I need to learn to work with it so I can quell it. So how do we bring down such energies, right? So now he's talking about different aspects of our being. Like, so when mind is condescending, sarcastic, full of conceit and arrogance, when I feel this energy of arrogance, right? So connecting that to the theme, how do we know? Maybe we should ask that. How do we know when we start to feel this, or when arrogant feelings are arising in us? How do we know? How do you know? You can have tea instead of talking, so hoping somebody else will talk. Go ahead. Right, so it's a good analogy of a lake, right, or ocean, right? And we can also connect that to going to the aspect of going deeper. Because if you think about a lake, you think about, you know, the superficial, the upper layer of a lake is affected by the weather, apparently affected, right? Because you can see that. So when it's windy, you can see that it's choppy, the water is choppy. But if you go deeper into that same lake, it's not as moved, right? Using the analogy, it's not as moved. So, right? So if we find a way to go deeper, and this is what we practice, right? Going deep, and then it's the same body of water, obviously, but it's a different quality of experience, right? Down below, it's a different quality of experience. So down below, so where is down below in me? What is the quality of down below in me is the question. What does that feel like? Because if I can turn my attention to that, I'm not ignoring what's happening on the, because again, it's the same body of water, right? But I'm not ignoring what's happening on the superficial upper level, but I'm connecting with something else. So what is that quality? What is a deeper level of our experience? Yeah, yours.
It feels like the moments when those automatic responses of shoulds or should nots disappear.
Mm-hmm.
That feels like the deeper moment. You know, like you were asking before about when does that ego show up. You know, like it's not like it's gone, but that sense of how you can find it earlier, and it, for me, any of those moments that kind of start to, you know, build irritation or whatever, it's like, oh, this should or should not. I was thinking about the way you're talking about fanning the flames. I was camping this last week, and, you know, like, I found myself oftentimes looking at the fire thinking, like, this should be hotter. This should not be this cold. And I would mess with it, you know, like, oh, if I turn it this way. But there were times when me even messing with it would actually put it out,
mm-hmm.
because it wasn't right action at that
mm-hmm,
moment.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes just letting it be. You know, my example today sitting in Zazen, I didn't have water before I came here, so I had a huge pain in my foot, just shooting, like, oh my gosh, that fire, that ember was there, and it was my choice at that moment. My immediate reaction was like, this should not be happening. And I noticed the should, and I was like, okay, just let it. And that ember will resolve itself. It will either be the fuel that works with you or warms you by the fire, because it can be that, or it can be the thing that just passes.
Right, but to be patient, to observe, to wait it out, to let it subside, right? Because it does. It does. If you give it time and you're patient with it, it does actually subside.
Yeah.
Right? So the point of observation, where do we observe from? Right? So if we go into a deeper aspects of our being, or a larger, right, a more spatial aspect of our being, and observe it from there. Observe the intensified emotion. Because sometimes, well, often I think intensified emotions shrink us. Right? So, because that's all we experience. And then there's the urge to say something. And it's blinding. Not blinding, but we see, but it's blinding in terms of the blinders, right? You know, so it's blinding everything else. Blinding us to everything else, right? So it becomes, no, I need to say that now. I need to say this to him or her now. Because, right? So we have to ask, is it a need of the moment, or is it me not knowing how to deal with this intensified energy, so I gotta go out with it? I need to express it, right? Because it's a big difference, right? Because if the moment calls for you to say something, then you say something. But is it the moment calling, or is it me not knowing how to meet me?
I think that's key.
Yeah, because, yeah.
The key element with this is that the advice has to do with not with feeling those things, but feeling vulnerable
mm-hmm.
to those
things. Mm-hmm.
So if you're vulnerable to, I mean, if you notice that you're kind of bringing up some anger or some turmoil, and then you feel vulnerable to it in the sense that you know that if you move, you may act upon that.
Right.
That's when the advice is coming and saying, you need to be still as a wood. If you are actually not kind of vulnerable to it and you can act, it's not about being still, it's about where are you acting from? Are you acting from that arrogance, mm-hmm. or you are acknowledging the arrogance but acting whatever needs to be acted in that situation without incorporating the arrogance as the key element of that? I think that is kind of the key ingredient there. It is more about when you're feeling those things, and because, I mean, like, sometimes you will feel those things and you still need to do something about it. Like, and how do we act not from that feeling, not from that turmoil, but from kind of a deeper space?
Mm-hmm.
How do we connect to that?
Right. So how do we connect that question to the practice? How do we connect this question to our Zazen? Right? Because we are training ourselves to get in touch with that aspect of our being. Right? I mean, that's what we're doing. We're training ourselves
to
experience that.
Totally. I think we need to kind of... I mean, I think the most important acknowledgement is what you were saying before about the shrinking. It's very obvious that if you only can see whatever is bothering you,
mm-hmm.
you are not connected to act.
Mm-hmm.
You're kind of, you're going to go in the wrong direction because you're not. So the deeper connection, could be the deeper in the lake or whatever we want to, kind of how we want to show it, is more about the perspective of everything is included. If everything is included, you may be able to act about that without having anything, you know, without having those emotions drive in your action. And that's what we try to do in Zazen. It's like, okay, so the pain is there. We still can not move. We still can understand that the pain can be there and we can be sitting anyway. You know, and that is a tough first thing to do than being comfortable. But like, if we understand that perspective, then that's the practice for these other perspectives. And you can be still, in this case, it's Zazen, what we're supposed to be doing. But also you can act if you, I mean, if you see that you're not acting from there. And because it's not about being still as a good, I think, you know, it's more about, the commentary is like, if you want to act from the wrong place, better be still.
Right.
That's basically it. And it's very similar to something that the founder of the Jesuits, he was saying that too all the time. He was saying, you don't act, you don't speak, you know, in moments where, you know, there's turmoil. You don't make decisions that are important when you are not in your center field.
Right.
So similar to that.
Right, and then the need, again, back to the need to identify, the need to be honest with ourselves, right? So when he says when it is inclined to boast, right, or when it is contemptuous of others. So we need to recognize that, inclined to boast, right? And that goes to a need. I may have a need to boast, right? I need to boast because of the way I feel about myself. Right, I need others to see me. I need them to see me in a particular way. All those things play in the background, right? So now what do we do with that need? Because, well, okay, I'm going to remain like a piece of wood. But the need to boast is not out of nowhere. It comes from somewhere. It comes from the way I feel about myself, right? So I want others to see something, right? Or I want to express something. Right, so again, it's not enough to just remain like a piece of wood. We have to examine what's going on. Right, to examine what's going on, and then work with that. Go ahead.
It was found that I somehow, when I'm trying to observe my behavior, my actions, I've always worked on trying to reduce the time between me actually doing something, you know, just completely inappropriate, and the time it takes to realize it afterwards, and then be like, oh my goodness, you know. And I spent my life trying to reduce that time to when it's happening in the moment, instead of a half hour later or an hour. It used to be days later, so I've improved it at least a little bit, or used to never happen,
right.
You know? But I would love for it to happen right there and then, you know? And that's to me, the real challenge, which I have yet to really, for a lot of times. And in terms of how the methodology of doing it, you know, I find it interesting when you talk about observing from a deeper place, you know? Because for me, it's always been this Western thing about encountering this messed up narrative with another counter narrative, with like positive thoughts, but it's still in some way intellectualized. It's still some way, it's not, that's why I like you talked about vulnerability, because, you know, if I just use my intellect, it never works. It's like, if I just think positive thoughts, I just forget about it. It's not, it just doesn't work. So there is something deeper that I haven't yet completely discovered. That I'm trying to discover through this practice as well. So
right, but then if you bring the intellectual process into the experiential process, you're limiting the experiential process.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not that I'm going to take it to go and then analyze on the go. There is a point that will not work anymore, and you're going to have to leave it behind. Pick it up when needed. Obviously, right? So, because it does serve a purpose, right? Intellectual reasoning. But there's a point that we have to leave it behind and dive fully into the experience. Actually, every zazen period, right? That's what we're talking about, right? You put aside the intellectual reasoning or process, right? For the time being. And you go directly into the experience. And the experience is the best teacher. It's teaching, but not in the way we want to be taught. And sometimes that creates a problem. It's not teaching, it's just that we don't understand the language yet. It's the language of silence. Sometimes we can refer that way, right? Refer to it like that. It's different language. We do speak it, but we don't know that we speak it. So that's why it takes time. But what he's talking about is very important in that process, because we train ourselves off the cushion in a different way, right? So this is when we talk about actualizing zazen. That's what it means, right? So you bring the stillness into motion, the practice of stillness into everyday life activity. And that's a question often people ask about. How do I bring my practice into my life? It's the same thing. It's not, how do I bring my practice? So if we, by asking the question, we create a separation. Mm-hmm. Right? It's so, and this is a good example of that, right? Now, the other thing is also, he's talking about, so to boast or being contemptuous of others, abusive and irritable, right? And also when my mind is averse to the interest of others and seeks my own interest. Very important line, right? When my mind is averse to the interest of others and seeks my own self-interest. Big chunk of the day, this is how we are. We don't want to admit it, but this is how we are. We act. We're very self-concerned. We don't look at things and like, oh yeah, what's going on over there? What's going on over there in relation to me? We're not saying it, but this is already in the background all the time. What does it mean about me? Is it for, is it against, which is what she was talking about, right? Is it for me, is it against me? That's all we want to know. Much more than what's going on, we want to know, what does it mean about me? So it's important to recognize that even after, you know, long time or years of practice, it's not gone. That way of thinking is not gone. Right? We do get better at meeting it, and we do get better at maybe releasing or not going with that, but it's still there. We're taught to think that way, right? This is, you know, from kindergarten, we're taught to think about ourselves. So there's a lot of going against the grain there. The other thing is silence. Sometimes silence can be perceived by other, can make other people uncomfortable. So we're practicing silence, so we should be good with that, right? We should be comfortable with silence. But then, what does that mean when other people become uncomfortable when you just say nothing? Right? They may perceive that as aggression. Sometimes there is aggression. Right? So we have to examine the energy, right? But so this is why it's very important, right? Because it's not covered up by words. Then the energy is very, I think, very perceptible. It comes out. If there is anger or aggression, it is going to be expressed even when we are silent. Right? Yeah.
I think sometimes
Raise the volume a little bit.
That silence is sometimes you need to be silent and walk away, because what you're about to say at that moment may not be the best thing to say. So it gives you that little time to cool down and find the right words for that person, for that situation,
right?
So that you can address it in a more compassionate way, instead, empathetic way, instead of an outburst of anger,
mm-hmm.
and volatile words that are only going to make the situation a lot worse. So that silence is necessary,
mm-hmm.
because otherwise it will make a situation that could have been something that passing our emotions quickly to mm-hmm. something that just explodes into something bigger. You know, I'm sitting here with this talk, and a lot of things are coming up for me, because I teach adults, and sometimes adults that I teach act like children in my classroom, and they come in with all of their programming, and they come in with all of their personal problems and issues, and with these huge chips on their shoulders and egos. And some of them feel that rules apply to everybody else except for them.
Right.
And when you actually turn around and, you know, coach them or redirect them, they blow up. It's like, why are you telling me this and you're not telling so and so and so? And I had a situation like that. I was like, oh my God, these adults are going to actually make me want to retire earlier from my. And I happen to love what I do, but I don't love some of the people that I'm doing it for, you know? And I just had that situation where I had two students that I call future professionals that don't act like that, but blew up in my class, and I saw I read the room and I saw how uncomfortable the rest of the students were feeling, how they were reacting, and inside me, like you say, banging the amp, I felt like this heat in my stomach, and I actually felt it rise up into my chest, and I figured like, it's gonna come out of my ears, and then I'm gonna explode. So I took a deep breath, and I'm like, okay. And they're all watching me because they wanna see, what are you gonna do about this situation? And I'm like, okay. It seems like you ladies have a lot that you need to talk about. And I said, but this is not the time or the place to talk about it. I have somebody upstairs that can listen. And I just sent them out and let them go talk to somebody else. And everybody in the classroom were like, what just happened?
Mm-hmm.
And then I felt the heat come down. And I'm like, oh, wow, what just happened, you know? Because I felt it. I mm-hmm. felt that if I said something and I engaged with them, mm-hmm. I was going to say all the wrong things.
Yeah.
You know, I was ready to say, like, you're adults, you're acting like children, and, you know, I cannot believe that you don't know the rules, you're not ready to graduate, and you're still not. I'm all this stuff was going through my mind, and instead of like, I think you need somebody to talk to, and this is not the right place or the right time, but I have somebody upstairs that has time to listen to you. So please leave the classroom, go upstairs. And I just felt like, so I felt like what I wanted to do and what I actually did, I felt like taking that moment to breathe and collect myself and let go of that anger that I was feeling at that moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
I you know, I feel like that it's due to my practice, because otherwise I would have said all the wrong things at that time.
Thank you. Yes. So what you're talking about is knowing how to access that, right? So it could be deep breath. It could be looking down, looking up. It could be just holding your fingers in a certain way, right? We need ways that divert us somewhere else from that inwardly, right? So we can actually examine. So in other words, we need to learn how to intercept that. If we don't know how to intercept that, it's just going to take over automatically. It's going to keep going in that direction and express itself. You want to say something?
Yeah, just in response, you know, developing compassion for people who aren't maybe not expecting them to be adults, and knowing that they're children in this moment would help to, you know, because then you can relate. I know when I work with the kids that I work with, they're all behavior. They're called the behavior kids, and they're put in this self-contained class, and I teach them what everybody else is learning, but on a different scale because of what they have to deal with, right? And my expectations are obviously different, but then if I'm in a room full of adults too, and I see them as children who are struggling, they're children. I see them as adult form, but and I see that they're struggling in their childishness.
Mm-hmm.
I can relate to that in terms of sometimes I feel like that child who's angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then developing compassion from there. How do you develop? I guess what I'm asking a question. How would you then? you're trying to quell the fire, right, and be with it and observe it, and but then how do you not just walk away from it or anything, but how do you draw compassion out of that situation? You know, because it's there for everybody, right? Compassion and love is there for everybody. Even though you feel like you want to rip your hair out, you know, there has to be a way to.
But you know, compassion, humility, we don't need to work on being humble, and we don't need to work on being compassionate. We need to identify what gets in the way. When we identify what gets in the way and we work with that, we dissolve that, humility and compassion naturally manifest. It's not something to create. It's something to recognize. And that's the depth. So from the depth of our being, we are compassionate. It's not a question. Why? Because in the depth of our being, we recognize interconnectedness. So you don't need to ask, how can I be compassionate to my toe? You don't ask that, right? There's no question about you're going to take care of it, right? So from the depth of our being, we're one. This is not an idea, Buddhist idea. Mm-hmm. Buddhism teaches how to experience it. That's all it does. It teaches us to experience it so we can realize it on our own. It's not like now you should believe in this. It's not selling interconnectedness, right? We don't have to buy it or buy into it.
But it doesn't always feel natural.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
I think that's right.
But then often what feels wrong is right, and what feels right is wrong. That's what we have to recognize. The fact that I feel something doesn't mean I should go and do something about that or say something, but I feel it.
That's my essential difficulty.
But no, but that's the difference back to the lake, mm-hmm. Stella's lake. So the depth or the upper layer of the that's the difference.
Yeah.
That's the difference. Do you want to add to it? Because I want to read another.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think stressing the interconnectedness is important, because I feel like if we're going too far in the direction of what we're just talking about, of rather than identifying what's getting in the way, but mm-hmm. going, I need to be more compassionate or whatever,
right.
I think we miss out in ways in which we perpetuate the suffering of others.
Right.
If they're lashing out at us, are we playing a part in that cycle that will then perpetuate it by
right.
the way we respond to it? Are we feeding it in ways either by enabling it through either engaging, like meet matching that energy,
mm-hmm.
or are we enabling it by trying to placate it because we prefer a nice, tranquil environment, and we think that by neutralizing that in whatever way is possible, it's solving the issue, but we might actually just be setting the stage for the cycle to start anew again. And I think that sometimes that discussion about silence or not acting on it immediately can be incredibly infuriating to the person that is experiencing that turmoil. I oftentimes wonder, when I have responded that way to somebody who is very much lashing out at me or creating a lot of suffering for others, where I just don't feed it, I often wonder, is that me being petty? But sometimes I just recognize, like, there is nothing I can say at this current juncture that's actually going to help the situation. Even if I engage in them, or I match them, or I argue with them, they're not listening. They're not open at this moment. And so by giving them nowhere to go, it would ideally dissolve. It might not, and I have to be okay with that as well. But I think that interconnectedness, it's not just simply we go in and we look at the ways we're doing it. We have to recognize that the ways that we're doing these things are often in concert with others, and it's just all kind of happening.
It depends on the energy we also put out, right? So we could be silent but passive-aggressive.
Yeah.
Or we could be silent and at ease. If we're silent and at ease and patient, practicing patience, then we are sharing our being. We're sharing depth with others.
Mm-hmm.
And others can recognize that depth and maybe connect with that, right? So, and that's the difference. So where am I at? We have to keep asking,
mm-hmm.
right? Where is my, and am I just waiting it out so I can just hold my lips together so I don't explode? Or am I actually working on finding ease and then allowing it to just move on, right? Or stay? And because we share all the time. Anyway, we share. We always permeate, mm-hmm. in and out. There's no wall.
Right.
So, I wanted to. We have a few minutes, but to go back to the commentary and maybe finish that. She says, the sooner we interrupt this predictable chain reaction, the better. At the preverbal stage of getting hooked, emotions are less enticing. They're still quite workable at the early stage of the thought process. By dissolving thoughts here, the klesha urge has no fuel and cannot expand or become explosive. When you feel the sting of an insult, for example, you don't have to magnify it with your thoughts or buy into the storyline that works you into a rage, right? Because the sting of the insult, right, it may be true, but we magnify it by thinking, oh, I'm better than that. I don't deserve that, whatever, right? How dare you say it to me? Then we magnify it. But if we don't go to such thoughts and we just allow it, rest in it, right, or lean towards the sharp edge, then we can actually relax into it and it passes. It passes, but then we grow in that opportunity. We grow in our ability to be in the world in a different way, right? So she says, you don't have to magnify it with your thoughts or buy into it, right? Just acknowledge the thoughts and let them fade away, then abide with the sharpness and bite of your experience. Abide with the sharpness and bite of your experience. Now, we don't want to do that. We don't want to do that. The alternative seems better. It's not. Because the alternative perpetuates something. But if we abide with the sharpness and bite of the experience, we can grow. If we go along with the immediate urge, we don't grow. We just don't grow. We repeat the same behavior. If you do get stirred up and the drama gets well underway, you can still interrupt the process. It's definitely more difficult, but it's possible. The final instruction to refrain from words or actions points to the easiest place to notice the urge, but the hardest time to refrain. It's true, right? It points to the easiest place to notice the urge, because we can see the urge, but then it's challenging to refrain because it's such powerful energy or energies, right? Now, the Shempa pull is so strong, it feels irresistible. Nevertheless, the instruction remains the same. Let go of the thoughts and relax with the underlying energy. The practice of remaining like a log is based on refraining, not repressing. Repressing will make the energy grow and grow and grow. Right? So then we explode at some point. Later on, we can explode. We suppress, 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 and then off it goes. I had a friend who lived in Japan for years, and he said people repress a lot of the emotions, and sometimes you see someone in the middle of the road screaming rage because of years and years and years of repressing emotions. At some point, it explodes. He said it's not uncommon. Anyway, when you realize you're thinking, just acknowledge that. Then turn your attention to your breath flowing in and out, right? Breathe in and out. To your body, to the immediacy of your experience, right? So the experience itself, not the thoughts about, right? Doing this allows you to be present and alert, not to what we think about the experience, but only to the experience. And thoughts have a chance to calm down. With this practice, it can be helpful to gently breathe in and out with the restlessness of the energy. This is a major support for learning to stay present. Basic wakefulness is right here if we can just relax. Our situation is fundamentally fluid, unbiased, and free. And we can tune into this at any time. And this is very fundamental to our practice. We need to learn how to tune into that. So in Zazen, we get in touch with that. We get off the cushion. We have to maintain the link, not leave it behind until we see it again, but maintain that link so it becomes stays available to us throughout the day. Even, or more importantly, most importantly, when things become muddied or sticky or painful or challenging. That's the most important time to bring Zazen into everyday life. The basic message is this. Instead of Turning up the heat and bringing your emotions to a boil, add some cool, refreshing water to the mix, and the Shenpa charge will subside, right? And so we have to identify what is the cool, refreshing water, right? So how do you bring being into doing? Is the coolness of being that she's talking about. If you bring the coolness of being into doing, the doing is not such a big deal. What's happening is not such a big deal, because the doing is, the being is just being. The being is there through ups and downs. It's continuous. It's constant. Here we have all our strategies for trying to escape the underlying discomfort of Shenpa. This agitated energy is painful. We feel the need to do something with it. Brag, gossip, cower, anything to get away. With a steady mind, we can see these strategies more clearly, right? The maneuvering of the mind she's talking about, and stop supporting them with our thoughts, emotions, and actions. The last line, remaining like a log, is powerful and useful practice for all of us. The more we tame our minds, the sooner we can acknowledge thoughts of for and against, and attachments to having it our way. Attachments to wanting to have things our way, right? Even when things have gotten out of control, we can still pause and refrain from pouring kerosene on the fire. So, very powerful stuff, I think, right? Very powerful, very important. Go ahead.
Thanks. Something that's been very helpful and actually worked for me recently, regarding all this, kind of nipping it all in the bud, was something I read by the Dalai Lama, that, who's, you know, the incarnation of compassion, they said. It's kind of a daily affirmation thing, but it's actually helped even on this trip. I decided I'm making this trip about my mother and my family and trying to make my presence a gift to them. It's all, because there are many reasons I don't want to come to the East Coast, but I put all that aside. I'm going to go try and be a nice thing when I get here. Mm-hmm. But the Dalai Lama said, and I've read a couple versions of it, but he said, every morning when you wake up, say, I'm lucky to be alive. I'm fortunate to be alive. I have a precious human life. I'm not going to waste it. I'm going to use all my energies to better myself, to open my heart toward others, to attain enlightenment for all sentient beings. I'm not going to talk or think badly about others. I'm going to try to be as much help for others as I possibly can. So, you know, so maybe just starting, I've been starting the day almost every day, actually running that through my head. I'm going to just help others. And this is in keeping with the teaching of no self anyway. Mm-hmm. We should remember that, I mean, if we haven't had the experience of anatman, of not existing, we should see intellectually that our self is pretty much a fabrication and a fiction anyway. But to start our day, I'm going to think about others. My main mm-hmm. focus is I'm going to try to be a good thing for other people, mm-hmm. a gift for other people. And if that's your intention in the first place, you're off all your interactions. If you can maintain that or remind yourself of that often,
right.
I think you're much more likely to not take offense, to be like, how can I help this person? How can I help this person? Mm-hmm. Can I give this person something? Right. And just keep forgetting about the self. And that's been, just the last few months, it's been actually helpful to me in all my human interactions.
Thank you. Yes, a good reminder for us. So finish it up, but staying still like a piece of wood. We have to also examine stillness, right? To stay unmoved also includes recognizing facial or body expressions, facial expression or body language, right? So we may not say anything, right? But the body is saying a lot. The facial expressions, right? Rolling out our eyes or whatever, right? So we are speaking. This is not what this is talking about, right? So we say, well, I'm not saying anything, but I'm saying a lot, right? Because I'm still reactive. I'm still allowing these energies to express themselves. So to actually learn how to be still unmoved, again, practice of Zazen, okay? All right.
Roshi, is there time for me to say something?
Sure, quickly, go ahead.
Yes, I'll be quick. Hi, I'm Kago. For those who don't know, nice to meet everyone. I just
appreciate a lot of this discussion about reframing. I've noticed in working with this ongo, there's something that's been coming up for me consistently around experimenting or feeling interested in a pattern of refraining instead of propagating. And I find that it helps me to stay open to whatever is going around me, and that my orientation for instance is like I'm open to whatever's going on. If someone needs my help, I'm open to helping them out. If the situation has arose, if the situation is there that needs me to do something, I'm there to do it. But by not trying to take anything that comes up and then propagate it or like make it into something that persists beyond the current moment, I've noticed that impulse to propagate on my part, it is something about trying to say something about myself or trying to reinforce or shore up some idea. This kind of gentle reminder or this gentle action of simply refraining in moments where I might instinctively propagate has been a really helpful guide. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so we'll wrap it up and continue another time. Four vows.
Passes by, an opportunity is lost. Each of us must